Jackson takes the snap, looking over the middle, pumps once, throws, end zone, caught! Game over! The Hayes in the barn! And the Ravens have won it in overtime! Hollywood Brown with his second touchdown catch of the night, and maybe the biggest of his career.
Talk about somebody who's having fun.
Yep.
That's Ravens voice Jerry Sandusky with a G, Jerry, as that was the game winner. Overtime, Ravens beat the Colts and complete the comeback as they scored not just one but two touchdowns with two-point tries, and then having forced overtime, got the kick, won the toss, and won the game.
Did Lamar Jackson go to the middle of the coin flip at 50-yard line and say, we want the ball, we're going to win the game, or does everybody keep the Hasselbecks away from themselves now?
I think that's it. I think he's learned from that.
A win's
approach.
A win, though, boys.
A win. It is, and that was a huge win as Baltimore, again, one of a number of teams that show up at 4-1 5 weeks into the season. And Baltimore sitting alone atop the AFC North, where it's Cincinnati and Cleveland that are 3-2, and the Steelers that are 2-3. But the Steelers, who have as big a win as anybody on their resume with that week one victory over Buffalo, lost three straight but got back in the win column with the victory over the Broncos. We welcome you to hour number two of the NFL Report. We'll remind you that we're with you until 12:30. And we have lots of NFL football coming your way today. You have Kansas City at Washington, which will be the game of the week that you'll hear with pregame coverage at 12:30, kickoff at 1. And then tonight, after you can listen to The Nation from 6 until 7, it'll be Seattle at Pittsburgh. Then tomorrow, the week concludes with you can either listen on our airwaves to the national broadcast or, of course, go over to News Talk 98.7. Mike Keith, the voice of the Titans, will have the call as Tennessee plays host to Buffalo. As Brian Rice mentioned, this is a huge stretch for the Titans as they rule the roost in the AFC South 3-2, and that is already two games better than the Texans and the Colts, and three games better than the Jaguars, who going into last week, you had their head coach pointing out, you know, we're just two games out of first. And it's like, I don't know that you need to go ahead and raise that banner, because all we're going to see is that those taillights pulling away.
Oh, dude. tell me you've never been an NFL head coach before without telling me you've never been an NFL head coach before. Dude, you got so many things to worry about. I appreciate your wishful positive thinking, but don't wish positive think 6 weeks into the season.
We can't say that Jacksonville right now is hanging in with the Dolphins. A touchdown pass, and it's 13-9 with the extra point pending. As they look, and both feet were in.
Isn't it so? Look, I'm not trying to make this fantasy segment, boys, but you know what? Nothing sneaks more than turning on your fantasy page going, look at this idiot starting Tua and Jalen Waddle. Tua threw a touchdown pass to Jalen. Oh, he already did. So for all you Jalen Waddle, Tua Tagovailoa fantasy owners out there, I hope you started him, because they're producing for you today.
That they are. It's London. It's game two. And as we've already talked about, it's amazing how they remain friendly and allies with what they've seen in terms of some pretty bad football in terms of teams. But they buy all the tickets. It's I don't know that they would support a team like that, but
I have to ask, and I don't mean to and throw a rock at me at the show's over if I'm derailing by asking this question, but why is it seems that NFL teams seem to be, I wouldn't say willing, but, man, if you're Atlanta this year giving up an eighth home game of revenue just to go over to England, and it seems like I get Jacksonville, but I feel like we keep seeing the Miami, New York, and Atlantas of the world always heading over to the pond, and it's just like, I'd much rather not have to play this game and then dictate where my bye week is, hence the reason why the Falcons and Jets are off this week. But point being, boys, I just feel like there should be a little bit more variety on who gets to say and not say, hey, we're giving up an eighth game. And if you're noticing, when some of these teams do go across the pond, they do go across, but they're the road team in these matchups. You're not seeing a lot of New England or Dallas's of the world giving up that eighth home game, or potentially what it is now with the change of the schedule.
Yeah, you get that. You do have that extra game built in the schedule, so teams can't. Hot take, I think the NFL did that in part. I mean, obviously you want the revenue and everything else, but you can now sell to some of your premier teams that draw well at home. Well, you're not actually giving up anything by going to play an international game,
right?
Because you still have the same eight home games, regular season home games, that your revenue model is built around. I don't love the London games just because of all those things that you mentioned. Having to go over there, having to adjust, it's usually a sloppy game. Is it usually a sloppy game because we send them bad football teams?
Yeah.
Or is it a sloppy game because you have to adjust everything to go over there? And then do you ever have a hangover coming back? There's just so much that goes into it. I realize it's here to stay, and any complaints of it are going to fall on deaf ears. I do wonder how much more popular the NFL could be over there if we sent them good teams. As you mentioned, John, they eat it up no matter what. We sent them the Dolphins and the Jaguars, and it sold out. Every ticket sold, and they're into it. Okay, that's fine. I do think the schedule, though, now with the extra game, is set up to send better football teams to international sites, not just London. I think there are more coming in the future, and they use that. Hey, you still have 8 home games, you still have 8 road games to justify it.
Yeah, Mexico City is going to remain in the mix as an annual visit, and Germany is starting to come to the surface. It's thought that that could be a fourth.
You don't want to go to England and watch your favorite team and have some bubble and squeak?
I have some old school issues with England, so no. But
are you familiar with bubble and squeak?
No.
The English breakfast dish, which includes cabbage, potatoes, and something meat of variety that is fried.
So that
the delicious bubble
as,
and squeak before
that
the
sounds
NFL
as
games.
Gross as I assumed it was before you explained it.
I just want to go over there one time and confidently set the menu down and go, yes, I am here for the Jets game, and yes, I would love some bubble and squeak.
That's right. Ingratiate himself.
A lot of people right now are Googling
like
bubble
that.
And squeak. He's not telling
Do you remember
true.
The Jerry Seinfeld commercial where he goes to London and he does a show and he bombs and he takes the American Express card out and says, I want to do the country, and then he shows up at the end and goes, well, so I was getting off the apples and pears. I was like, oh. That line's funny. I think the NFL games in all over the world are ultimately good for what the league wants to build. You know, it goes all the way down to other sports translate because you're familiar with them, you grew up with them. There aren't, I was told this by several people in the Hollywood realm, there aren't more football movies because football movies bomb internationally. So there are a ton of great football stories out there to tell. Nobody wants to tell them because the international gate is zero. If this helps something like that, you know, anything that helps this sport continue to build around the world, just poor. And if you're the Jaguars, with what you've been through the last couple of weeks, then you have to go to England, move your whole operation over there for a couple of weeks. At least, hopefully, they kept Urban Meyer out of the pubs.
Why don't we go ahead and jump to the good and the bad from last week in terms of what was most surprising. Tyler Ivins, lead us off. Take one from each ledger. Good, bad, what really caught you off guard?
The good part of it that really caught me off guard was the fact that Buffalo actually took everything they could from that AFC Championship game last year and said, when we play again, we're going to show up and we're going to smash you in the face. And they end up doing that. They sat through the lightning and the rain delay. They end up coming through and they show that, look, we actually are going to take this opportunity to grab that brass ring and try to be the king of the AFC. How often have we heard about, well, Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas, Bruce Smith, that was great. You'll never be able to relive those days. As a Jets fan, AFC East fan, I'm not supposed to like anybody from the tuna can in Miami to the cheaters in Foxborough. I have respect to my neighbors of the North. Hat tip for them. Good on them. The bad thing that surprised me is that Urban Meyer continues to put his foot in his mouth and continues to do things that is distancing himself between the relationship of him and his players. He was asked post-game about that fourth and short against the Titans last week and said, why did you not call a quarterback sneak there? What is wrong with Trevor Lawrence where he can't move the ball 6 inches to continue the drive or score a touchdown? And it was Urban Meyer's response of saying, well, he's just not comfortable with doing that just yet. Maybe perhaps down the line further along in the season, we'll be more comfortable with asking Trevor Lawrence to do that. Within 15 minutes of Urban Meyer leaving the podium, Trevor took the podium. Second question out of the report, or second question during the roundtable was, Trevor, I'm 100% comfortable taking the quarterback sneak. The call just wasn't coming in, but if there's ever a time where I need to take the football, I think I could have gotten what my team was looking for. The disconnect continues to blow me away between Urban Meyer and his team.
Brian?
My positive is it surprised me that the Bears have been able to rise up Justin Fields, showing he's a little more comfortable. Look, there's a lot put on him, and I think Matt Nagy had to find a way to simplify things enough for Justin Fields as a first-year guy. What can he do? What can we go execute? I think that's why he looks so good in the preseason, because the preseason is very simple. So what can we do that is simple enough for a first-year quarterback to execute but it's complicated enough that an NFL defense isn't going to automatically stop it. And the negative is the whole John Gruden situation. You know, when I worked at UT, I had the opportunity to be around John Gruden more than once, and he's an intense guy. He very much, even in a behind-the-scenes setting, comes across very much as that fun guy that was on Monday Night Football. And I'm not going to cast any stones. I think we have all written, said things that we regret and that cast in another light would be very detrimental to our personal relationships and our professional relationships. That does not in any way excuse what he said or what he did. I'm just surprised and I'm disappointed because that is somebody that I've thought a lot of for a long time, has done a lot of good to promote the brand of football in this country, help bring the Monday Night Football franchise back. And by the way, is a really good football coach. You know, he had the Raiders in a really good spot for this year. So I'm disappointed on a lot of levels in John Gruden. And I think a lot of the ha-ha jokes that people made, there's nothing funny about what happened because there's nothing funny about the words that he said first. And there's nothing funny about people that do work in the NFL. I don't buy for one second that the NFL looked at all those emails and the only objectionable person they found was John Gruden. I don't buy that for one second. You'll never convince me of that. I could read every email in there that they claims there, and I would not believe that. But some of his opinions are prevalent at certain levels of the NFL. And that's not acceptable either. That's not a good look for the league. It's not a good look for anybody. John Gruden's the scapegoat for it, and that's fine. I understand. He earned that.
Yes.
He earned that 100%. But I think there are a lot of other things going on in the league, particularly in the Washington football team investigation,
right,
that led to all this, that I think are as bad or worse than what John Gruden said. And I hope those things are educated as well.
Common thread quickly, just to add to the John Gruden situation. I find it, in a way, puzzling but yet comical at the same time. Anytime somebody addresses these type of allegations or having to answer to the proof of some of the responses that they made in an email, in a text, in person, whatever it may be, the common response is always, that's not the person who I am. No, that's 100% the person you are. It just seems like anybody who says that seems to be just the crutch that they always use.
Character is what you do when nobody's watching.
And index finger to the nose.
That's it. We all do and say things or whatever. Who we are is who we are. And
co-signed.
When you think that nobody's ever going to read this other than the person you send it to, you are your most authentic self. And I'll be frank. That hurts as somebody who got to know him just a little bit, that is who he actually is, at least it appears.
Yeah, we will talk more about that for sure in just a couple of moments. On the good side, I'll say I really like Kevin Stefanski as a head coach. And the fact that your team would have the presence of mind that we need to get the ball back, let's pull him. And well, they can't pull him. It's just the same as one of yours. But for the defense to circle around and not allow Austin Ekeler to take a knee just because to win we have to get the ball back, they push an opponent into the end zone to give the touchdown. I just thought that to me shows you that this Cleveland Browns team is not the one that was just the misfit toys that were collected a couple years ago, and you had a first-year head coach that was a horrible decision in terms of the hire, Freddie Kitchens, to take over that franchise just because he had a hot finish to as an offensive coordinator the year before. It was a horrible choice, but they were lucky that Stefanski was still there the next year because I think they've got it right, and I just love the fact that they had that presence of mind to say, you know what, probably not going to work our way, but we're going to give ourselves a shot. And they did. It just came up short.
That's how you know that things might be turning rosy for Cleveland. How do you swing and miss completely on choosing the wrong guy? Kitchens versus Stefanski. Go 12 months and get a chance to go. Can we also pick the other guy too? Come on down. Good on Cleveland, and they're making the most out of the second go-around, or at least the second opportunity chance at Kevin Stefanski.
And then as far as the bad side of things, highlighted just how rough it's been for kickers. And you, again, throw out the numbers.
13.
Yes.
13, there were 11 going into Sunday Night Football, and then you saw the snap on the 12th one and the 13th one that occurred in that game against there were two in the Sunday Night game. There was none missed in the extra points were not missed in the Indianapolis-Baltimore game. So it was 12 and 13 happened on Sunday Night Football in that rainy game at Kansas City.
Yeah, and to me, it's more difficult to find your franchise kicker than it is to find your franchise quarterback.
What do you mean there's not Justin Tucker's growing out there?
And we know how difficult it is to find a franchise quarterback because you have the same group of guys that just wait for Monday and the phone call that says, I'm getting on a plane and I'm going to X NFL city because there's going to be a kicking tryout. Or at least you're going to bring somebody in just to give a look and perhaps put a little bit of pressure on the guy that obviously isn't responding so well to pressure. You're missing kicks that were big in the game. I just wonder exactly what the mindset is when it's like, we're going to bring in these five guys, see what they can do. But I can't imagine that circuit is so interesting where they're all sitting in the waiting room with the perhaps the golden toe shoe that's standing in the sticking out of the gym bag, and it's like, Coach so-and-so will see you now. But, I mean, the Titans have had so many kickers. I believe it's Randy Bullock's number over the last
53?
3 or 4 years. 14.
Thinking Keith Bullock. It's like, that's a lot of kickers.
But 14 kickers, I think, over the last 3 years.
Whew. Do you think that Mike Nugent, Cairo Santo, keep giving me random kickers? You think they all just hang out in a fraternity by themselves, like in a group chat? Like, what are we going to eat after it's over in Dallas? Because if Greg Zuerlein keeps shanking these field goals, Dallas could be next on the list.
Maybe kickers live together like the Heisman House.
See, I was about to say, it's not the Heisman House, it's Extended Stay America, because they go on the road and they can hang out for a while, try out, make the practice squad, and then perhaps they go on to another locale.
It's one hell of a continental breakfast, boys.
Kickers are the position that accrues the most Hilton points over the course of the season because they cannot have permanent.
But to his point about finding the 32 best at the quarterback, finding the 32 best that can hit consistently as a place kicker, he's not wrong.
Okay, but are we surprised, guys? Because how many times over the last, 8 or 9 years, have we tweeted the words college kickers? Eventually, those guys matriculate on to the National Football League, and for whatever reason, they get less consistent at that level. Maybe a lot of these guys need to be working with their daily kicking guru that they've had since high school. I don't know what it is, but I guarantee there are a lot of highly paid men in locker rooms right now that hate their kickers even more than college players.
Well, you tell me where I can find the next Butker or Justin Tucker. Gosh, I can't talk this morning. I'm sorry, burnt my tongue on coffee. Tucker and the Butkers of the world. Tell me where I can find them, because you know what? I have no problem seeing my team invest draft capital to get a guy in an early round. Now, I'm not talking second round Mike Nugent, second round place kickers, but point being, if you can find a Janikowski or somebody who will give you distance, length in a career, so be it, because they are so valuable these days.
Yeah, if you want to see just the reach of scouting in the National Football League, just track where kickers went to college. You do have those that you recognize from the Southeastern Conference or the Big Ten or so on. But just look. I mean, look where Adam Vinatieri was from. I mean, the greatest kicker the NFL has ever seen in terms of...
Pick me. South Dakota State.
Exactly.
NBC.
But there you are. I mean, it's not as though it's a lack of trying and or looking. But it is amazing to me that when you look at the best kickers, it's not going to be, oh, I recognize that school. It's going to be, wow. But they still, I mean... You have such a handful of guys that right now are the strongest leg kickers, the best of the best, are the most accurate that the league has ever seen. But now you've got so many that's like, gosh, we can't afford to stick with this guy. Let's go make a couple of phone calls.
Do you hear what John just said? Some of the guys are recognizable, like in the SEC. He just essentially said, enjoy looking at Rodrigo Blankenship's mug for the next 17 years. Sweet, Speed Racer, through the pipes.
You find some guys who are mentally tough and can handle being criticized by fans and media, because kickers in college aren't often heavily criticized. Kicking is by its nature a failure game. It's not quite baseball where, you know, a 300 average puts you in high esteem. But as one of the articles I was talking about earlier on the spate of missed kicks last week, we're not talking about missing a bunch of gimmies in a lot of cases. We're talking about blaming kickers for missing very difficult kicks. Guys miss extra points now because we pushed the extra point back because it was automatic because kickers were so good. That position got so good that we started drawing up rules to make it harder on them, and now we're surprised that they aren't as good as they used to be. Because if you're consistently having to try to make a, what is it, a 35-yard extra point
33.
Now? 33-yard extra point. Well, if you miss one of those, maybe it gets in your head a little bit when you line up for a 43-yard field goal. We made it harder for them. They're not as consistent as they used to be. That's okay. It's now part of the game because they got so good.
That's right. Let's go rapid fire with these next two questions,
yep.
And then we'll move on because other things to talk about. But your team of the week for week five, Brian Rice.
Sorry, you said team of the week, the yes. LA Chargers. The LA Chargers, for all the reasons I mentioned earlier, so, so good with Justin Herbert.
Dallas Cowboys, beat the teams that are below you, do what you need to do, and if you want to embarrass them and rub their nose in the poop carpet, rub their nose in the poop carpet.
I will go with the Buffalo Bills. Again, just the fact that they were able to pull themselves out from under the dark cloud for them, that was the Kansas City Chiefs. Can't wait to see what happens next because, my goodness, they're playing some football. Primetime player for Week 5, Tyler Ivins.
You know what? I got to keep also giving a little bit of love to him as well. That's Mark Andrews. What he's able to do, two touchdowns, 100 yards. When I looked at this guy in Norman, Oklahoma, and I went, that's a good tight end, but I don't know if he's going to be an Oklahoma NFL tight end. He's become the from Oklahoma NFL tight end, Mark Andrews, Baltimore Ravens.
The thing is, it's like Devontae Adams. You know who it's going to. And it
try to
doesn't
stop him.
Matter. It
try to
just
stop him.
Doesn't matter that you know who it's going to. The question is, what is, and one-handed catches. I mean.
Give me.
Kind of a Lenny Dykstra-type tight end. Sometimes he gets in his own way because he plays so hard, but you don't want anybody else going that hard. I mean, you would love to have him suit up for your
Without
team.
Question.
I take you back to the start of the show. Lamar Jackson, speaking of, you know what he's going to do. You can't stop at 37 of 43, 442 yards. Four touchdowns, goose egg on the interception ledger. So, so good in leading that comeback.
And always like to throw one in the direction of guys that are continuing to climb the ladder. We were talking about last week, my player of the week was almost Dan Marino because he showed up in so many different headlines as so-and-so just passed or equaled what Dan Marino did that was magical. Aaron Rodgers gets the nod for me, 344 yards, two touchdowns. His team was pushed to the limit, but Mason Crosby eventually hit the field goal that gave them the win in Cincinnati. 422 career touchdown passes. He just went past Phillip Rivers, who had 421, fifth most in NFL history. And Rodgers, again, continues just to keep Green Bay on the path that it's on. You can put the Packers in that group of teams that are 4-1, and they had the horrible showing week one as they got trucked by the Saints. They haven't lost since. Aaron Rodgers gets my vote. We'll get a break. We've got more coming your way as today the NFL report is at Johnny Carino's on the Parkway in Pigeon Forge as you listen to 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Mason Crosby for the win. Snap and placement. Here's the kick. It is up. It is
good.
Mason Crosby got it done. Fourth time a charm. Fourth time a charm for Mason Crosby. And the Packers win it in overtime. 25-22.
Wayne Larrabee, the voice of the Packers, as he got it done, finally got it done.
Walking around like a member of the Four Horsemen in the WCW days. Fourth time's a charm, boys. Woo! Good on Crosby, though. Points are points, and a win's a win. Aaron Rodgers just walking off the field with his roadie haircut slicked on back, just putting his fist in the air. What's up, boys? Leading the division.
Yes, without a doubt, and they do have a nice lead in the division. As at 4-1, they are a game better than the Chicago Bears, which went from perhaps being the team most likely to lose their head coach during the season to now being one game out of first and in the hunt for a playoff spot. What's interesting is, even with the Packers winning four straight games, still -2 points allowed versus +4. So point differential, they're still under.
Very nice.
In fact, it's interesting. The Vikings are the only team in the NFC North that have scored more points than their opponents. And the Vikings are 2-3, but they are +4. It is a goofy, goofy game. It never ceases to amaze.
You know what? Can I just add to that NFC North nugget real quick? Detroit Lions, first team ever to lose at the buzzer twice in the same season, field goal length of more than 50 yards. So you want to throw out crazy in the NFC North, John Wilkerson? Every team has a little bit of crazy tied to them 6 weeks into the NFL season. Man, who can't love football? It is amazing.
Isn't it, though? Always is. And the Lions just simply find a way to come up short.
Oh,
We'll talk about their chances to perhaps get that first win for their new head coach a little bit later. But do want to talk a little bit. There's only so far that I think it's worth going down this path, and that is what Brian talked about earlier on a couple of occasions with the fact that John Gruden is no longer the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. In terms of the decision and moving forward, I don't think there is any question that the Raiders were not given any opportunity to do anything different than what was the case. And, of course, Gruden resigned. I mean, don't forget that. He was the one that just realized where this was going. But if he hadn't, I think he was given the opportunity to step away. But you go back to what Mike Mayock said. He said he is he's sad. He says, to be honest with you, I'm sad for the whole Gruden family, not just John. But at the end of the day, we're all accountable for our actions, and that's how we have to look at it. And now, some, doesn't take long for people to break out the foil helmets and the conspiracy talk that, well, they just wanted a way out of their 10-year, $10 million per year contract. And it's like, why would you want? Your team was 3-0. You were one of the last, you were one of the five remaining unbeaten teams just 2 weeks ago. Why would they think that we need to get out from under this? If Mark Davis has been anything, it's willing to do what he thinks it takes for his team to win. That's why he's the one that signed him to the 10-year, $10 million per year contract. Now, I would say what's fair to ask is what was kind of just some ancillary notes that came out of the Gruden story is that there would not be any other discussion regards to other emails among the 650,000 that were examined. And again, this comes from an investigation that's not just bad behavior, it's atrocious behavior that has been alleged against the Washington franchise. And for what has been alleged, and it looks like they're are roots to the allegations, how they can say this is where the transparency ends is beyond me. I do believe that the Players Association is correct, and I sure hope there is continued pressure on Washington to, because the NFL can't say everything's good, we now move forward, because there are things that have to be answered specifically to actions by not just one, but maybe several within the administration of the Washington football team.
Back to Brian's point, you can't just be a, yep, we found the one issue. This was the one black issue. The this is the one stepchild. This is the one just complete black eye of the situation is what I was trying to get at. There's so much more to it. And if you know this is just the tip of the iceberg, what more and what could end up being the difference in the NFL? And this is Roger Goodell right now who understands that this is an opportunity to choose your own adventure. You can either be the commissioner who tries to sweep this under the rug as quickly as possible before all anarchy takes over, or you try to find a way to release it and then a lot of things in your tenure as commissioner of the NFL when you continue to take heat. Remember how the NFL used to just be a league where, and forgive me, but this is how I used to look at Roger Goodell and still to a little bit do. This used to be a league where you could hit your wife, but you couldn't hit a bong. Domestic abuse based on marijuana use and where we are now. And there's so many different layers to Goodell and the NFL since, you know, in the last 15, 20 years. This is a beautiful sport. It's an incredible sport that entertains us for 21, 24 weeks a year. And I'm there every Sunday on my couch. I'm paying for the expensive packages on the cable provider. I'm wearing the gear that cost me times 300 of what the price should be. But when you take all that off the table and you enter the real-life situations into the equation, it can be a very, very dark hole. And the NFL right now is staring at that dark hole right now. And they got to find a way to either clean this up, back up in reverse, and ensue that this never happens again. Because if not, the second time or third time or fourth time this happens, it could be something very detrimental to the future of the National Football League.
You know, I hate to go NFL conspiracy theory, but two-plus years ago, a friend of mine that works in the league said Daniel Snyder changed the name so this investigation will go away. There was a feeling among people that worked in the league that part of the reason the NFL pursued an investigation against some actual atrocious behavior in a franchise with multiple people who had brought complaints and on and on. There was a feeling among some in the NFL that the only reason the NFL seriously brought in an investigation was because they wanted to pressure Daniel Snyder to changing the name, which he said he wouldn't do. Daniel Snyder changed the name, and suddenly that investigation kind of went on the back burner. And then somebody who had access to those emails decided that John Gruden was going to be the scapegoat for something else. And, it, again, let me be clear. It does not in any way excuse the things that John Gruden said or the things it appears he believes. Does not excuse any of that at all. But the fact that this is potentially where it stops feeds that thought that the NFL came up with this investigation not for noble reasons, not because they thought Daniel Snyder's behavior was wrong or the actions of his football team were wrong. They just wanted to pressure him to do the thing that most everybody agreed that they needed to do at that point. And once he did it, no harm, no foul, we're done. That it doesn't do anything to dispel that, and I think that's as big of a problem as anything else.
And and while we have absolutely no reason to think that we can't be 100% confident that the NFL will always continue to have huge misstep after huge misstep when it comes to some PR things, I just, for the life of me, can't think how the league can think that everyone's just going to say, oh, okay, nothing else to see here, because it's obvious. When you, again, look at what led to the alleged behavior that went to and fed this investigation starting in the first place, how can you just leave that hanging? I mean, to say, I do think, and I sure hope, that there's more, because the NFL will certainly have more than egg on its face when it comes to if everything else is just like, nope, we've seen all we had to see, and for this reason, we'll just move on in the interest of the greater good.
I mean, completely agree. I mean, in full agreement with you. I hope there is, but boys, what are the chances it actually happens?
Yeah.
That's a shame.
And I do.
This is the end of a crappy Netflix series that just goes, we get no resolution out of this. Cool, I'm not coming back. But yet, guess what we do every beginning of September? We always come back.
Yeah, Derek Carr, of course, now, and he's leading a team that goes on in a much different feel with his team having lost back-to-back games. Now it's a new head coach in Rich Bisaccia, who's Bisaccia is going to be the acting head coach since he was the associate head coach. We'll see what happens for the Raiders. Their first task, very winnable, as they head to Denver. But he points out, he says, maybe we should look at all franchise emails as far as to see if everybody, well, not if everybody's in line, but if there isn't bad behavior that has been present in other organizations. Don't think we would ever get to that point, but to know, and with the contention that was already made on this program, and rightly so, that you can bet that you would find communications with, I mean, and who knows how widespread they would be, whether it would be the administration, or it would be the coaching staff, or it would be anything along top to bottom within the hierarchy of a franchise. Absolutely, you would find stuff. All you have to do is look at group emails that you might receive at work to think, golly, I don't know that I would have shared that with everybody. I just think that, yeah, there would probably be a lot that you would see that needs to be cleaned up if you were to shine a light into the darkest corners of the league.
That's the reason why out of the four of us here, I've asked Bad Takes Andy never to text me again, because sharing with me some of your kid photos, I don't want to see any of that anymore, okay? It's the reason why we call you Bad Takes Andy. And all joking aside, John, you're absolutely right, because if you want to see the root of evil and how ugly things can get, as much as right now the focus is on Las Vegas and the Raiders and John Gruden, every person's got a skeleton in the closet. They just keep pushing further and further and adding more clothes and more hangers. But eventually, if you clean it out, you see a lot of everything. I don't think the NFL wants to drop that atomic bomb.
And remember, it was John Gruden's personal email account, not a team-affiliated one.
Correct.
And it wasn't his ESPN email account either. I think there are a lot of people who have emailed some official team accounts, friends and family, going, hope mine doesn't come out. You know, we remember the John Curry emails at Tennessee. There's a lot of people that had texted and emailed him that probably wish that hadn't become public. And you wish that you had his personal cell phone number instead of the official one.
Raise your hand if you made a Brady Hoke all caps joke this week between coworkers.
100%.
Cross the room, high five. San Diego State thread between me and Brian Rice earlier this week. Yeah, who knew? Brady Hoke's head coach of San Diego State. I don't know. We found that out this week. Joke aside.
You mentioned the gentleman that we're now going to listen to for the next couple of minutes, because it's that time, and that is the takes of the week. We'll find out whether they're good or bad. There have been both. But Andy Sellers joins us now, our esteemed engineer. Andy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing quite well. And we can we update what's going on? It's still 13-10, Dolphins, Jags?
It is 17-3, Jacksonville.
17-13,
Jacksonville.
Wow, so the Jaguars have the lead
in
London.
Signs of life.
Of course, I take Miami to cover, and then they start playing like this.
Welcome to the Andy Circus, you clown.
Gotta love live betting.
So, week six, what can we look forward to? What do you think is bound to happen?
All right, I got one that is foolproof. Can't go wrong.
Goodness
this
gracious.
This is going to be fantastic. Geno Smith.
She is unsinkable.
That's right. Geno Smith's going to come in today. He's going to be the starting quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks. And over the course of however long he gets to play until Russell Wilson's back, he's going to do something that Russell Wilson hasn't been able to do this year, and that's give them a winning record with him at quarterback.
So you're going winning record, Geno Smith, Seattle Seahawks, while he is the signal caller for Pete Carroll.
And it starts today with a win against a bad Steelers team.
Badge, you can turn off.
I'm just gonna mute you.
That's right.
And let everybody be happy.
hold your applause. Another reaction to the end.
Real quick. Former Jet Geno Smith is going to be the starting quarterback of the Seahawks, lead them to a winning record that will then keep the Seahawks' first-round pick from then being gifted back to the Jets. Sir, that's called full-circle storylines, which the NFL loves completing.
You know what's great about it is a lot of players do well when they get on a real team. So,
remind me, how did the things work between the Titans and Jets this year?
Everybody lays an
egg
occasionally.
Keep going.
The Jets just do it more often than everyone else.
Keep going.
So if you look at the next three games, because that's how long Wilson is guaranteed to be out.
Okay.
They've got the Steelers. They've got the Saints at both. They're at the Steelers. They're home against the Saints, and they're on the road against – or they're home against Jacksonville. Jacksonville's a very winnable game. The Saints, Jekyll and Hyde with their quarterback, so you never know what team you're going to get there. I like their chances with that one. And the Steelers are an old team. They've got a lot of problems with the quarterback. Ben Roethlisberger is not the same Ben Roethlisberger of old. And I think you got that against that good defense. He's going to struggle.
Well, we saw Geno Smith do some nice things. He kept Seattle in the game, actually gave the Seahawks a chance to take the lead at one point in the Thursday night game against the Rams. He has had a little extra time to prepare for tonight's game against Pittsburgh. But what happened? Geno at times going to Geno. Chance to take the lead. What happens? First play. Stumble, receiver down, pass thrown, interception.
I mean,
that's a song and verse that Tyler Ivins can sing in his sleep.
It's hard to get the Jets
backwards
out of you.
And
it really is. It's really hard to get the Jets out of you once you've been there that long. He's indoctrinated in the bad play.
His own teammate broke his jaw in the locker room. That tells you everything you need to know about Geno Smith, all right?
Didn't say he had to be very likable.
You know what?
He'll win.
I'll tell you this right now, Andy. There's sometimes I laugh at some of the comments you make, and they end up coming to fruition, and I'll be the first person to stand in line and greet you with a congratulations and a handshake. You are so far off base, I want to check your personal compass on this one, dude.
Well, we'll find out.
We will.
I think that he has everything in position to do this. They've got an easy schedule. They have a good team around him. Just manage the game. You don't have to go out and beat anybody. Just manage the game and you'll win.
All right. So, Geno Smith, winning record as the starting quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks. Are you calling all three or are you just saying winning record?
Winning record, as long as he's in. If he's in for 5 weeks, 6 weeks, winning record.
Okay. What else have we got?
That's it this week.
All right.
That's a big enough one.
Yeah, you certainly put a lot of time and effort into that one. And just like a thesis, having to defend.
I don't like a ton of the upsets this week, so some weeks are harder to find that little nugget, but he seemed like a golden one.
Oldest coach in the NFL, Pete Carroll, is going to have to try to go through the choppy waters of this NFL season without Russell Wilson.
I don't think Pete Carroll survives this season. I really don't. I think.
What's he going to do, fired because he lost his all-pro quarterback?
There was all that turmoil in the offseason of, are we going to have to pick between Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, and who do we pick? I am not saying I agree, but I can see how he got there.
That's right. The franchise rarely picks the coach.
He may finish out the season. I don't think he's the coach next year.
So what are you going to tell me right now? Eric Bieniemy is the next head coach of the Seattle Seahawks, Las Vegas Raiders?
That would be my guess. That'd be my favorite for it.
We're both wrong. LAUSC Trojans.
If he goes in the NFL, I think it would probably be to the Seahawks.
Okay. Well, we will see what happens. Your thoughts on just what Andy spelled out for us?
As someone who was listening to the Geno Smith performance on my way home from calling Thursday Night Football of my own last week, I was heartened by what he was doing and then disheartened for him for the ultimate failure.
So we shall see.
Yes.
But you, how did you do last week, Andy, in terms of your predictions?
Well, that depends. Do you think Trevor Lawrence looked like a number one pick?
Mike Keith thought so.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So I think I hit on all of them.
Because that's when you had the Bears beating the Raiders.
Correct.
And then you had Trevor Lawrence looking like the top pick of the draft. And when that was the last question I asked Mike Keith, you had the chance to see Lawrence take on the Titans. What did you think? And he goes, he's it. He's just so kind. He pointed to, you expect guys that are – I mean, you see, he said, Andrew Luck, he says, first of all, hated the fact that he played for the Colts because he had so much respect for him as an athlete. And the Titans could never beat him, never did. And he goes, but you just see his ability to run, to throw, and you just marvel at his talents. And you look at somebody who's even bigger than Luck, and he says, sometimes you talk about 6'6", you're thinking, well, he's got a little too much height, a little too much range, a little lanky, that you just don't see the fluidity. But he said, that's what you see. When he runs the football, it's amazing how well he runs. When he throws the football, amazing how well he throws it. So he thinks that Trevor Lawrence is the real deal. And so he says, unfortunately, they'll be seeing a lot of him over the next few years.
Curious to see what he can do with a real coach.
Yeah.
And he'll get to do that next year.
That's right, which is a previous bad take as we circle back around. Well, previous take, I should say. We don't know whether it's bad or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bill O'Brien probably has still a little love for you.
Because Bill O'Brien loves me.
Because he called the shot. He loses, and he's fired, and boom, there it went. But what we will do is get a break because boom goes the dynamite, and we'll be back to close out hour number two of the NFL Report. And again, we'll remind you, we are here at Johnny Carino's, where you've got the half-price family platters on Monday, Wednesday. They have their wine Wednesdays. All bottles of wine are half price. So whether you love the classics or the spice, it will always be fresh and handmade to order at Johnny Carino's. See for yourself at carinos.com and take advantage of the Carino's Italian coupons in the Knox County School Coupon Book as we're here on the Parkway in Pigeon Forge. Final segment to hour number two of the NFL Report next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Second and 16, Herbert, play action. Throws the screen, has a blocker. Here comes Eckler, bouncing outside to the 10, to the 5, still on his feet into the end zone. Touchdown, Chargers!
There's somebody who's having a whole lot of fun these days. Matt Smith, the voice of the Chargers, as it was Herbert to Eckler, the second, I believe, of the three touchdowns that the running back for L.A. put up on the board against Cleveland. This is the final segment to hour number two of the NFL Report. The panel today, Brian Rice, Tyler Ivins, were with you until 12:30. We step aside for NFL football, and you'll hear a lot of it this weekend, not only on our station, but also our sister station. But Kansas City and Washington is the matchup today that you'll hear at 1 o'clock. Then it's Sunday Night Football tonight after the nation concludes, which is from 6 until 7. At 7:30 is when the pregame starts, Seattle at Pittsburgh. And then the week concludes, we will have the national broadcast that will be Buffalo in Nashville against the Titans. And with that being an 8:15 kickoff, you can tune in for Titans pregame coverage on News Talk 98.7 starting at 7 o'clock. But with so much that is continuing to swirl about, you do have, let's see, we've talked about a number of things. I thought I had it right here handy. Just a quick run through with the fact that we have seen, we talked about Matt Nagy when it seemed like the seat was getting warm. Back-to-back wins for the Bears turned the conversation just a little bit. 5 weeks in, which coach or coaches should be looking over their shoulder? Is there anybody that is right there, job one for you, Brian, as far as somebody who might get that call to bring their playbook.
I'm still on Urban Meyer watch. I realize that it's his first year. Hey, they might get their first win today over in London. I'm on watch for him. I don't know that this is a long-term thing for him after this week. One of the coaches I was worried about, for lack of a better term, coming into the season, how was he going to perform this year, was John Gruden, and the answer was great, and then it's obviously not. Matt Nagy is another guy that's been on the hot seat, so to speak, but as you mentioned, John, the Bears playing a little better now, have a winning record. Justin Fields, you find out what he can do. So I don't know that there's anybody that sticks out to me from that perspective that isn't already, you know, a lot of your teams with poor records are teams that you kind of expected to be there. So I don't know that there's anybody out of the ordinary. I kind of agree, though, with Bad Take Andy. I don't know that Pete Carroll is long for Seattle, but that's more of a factor of last offseason than it is what happens on the field while Russell Wilson's hurt.
You want me to get a little crazy here?
Get crazy.
What's the future of Mike Zimmer like in Minneapolis?
They got the last-second win against the Lions, which probably shouldn't be a last-second situation. You have been missing Dalvin Cook a little bit, but I also think that he is one that is...
If the elements are there, that it's okay, you get to at least live on to next week, so be it. But at season's end, after the massive contract handed out to Kirk Cousins...
Yes.
You let Stephon Diggs walk because you couldn't afford to pay both him and Adam Thielen. Justin Jefferson emerges, but you haven't seen the most of Justin Jefferson like you got last year. Maybe there's nothing there, but... John, that passionate fan base is sick and tired of finishing second and sometimes third fiddle in the NFC North. I just question what's happened since the blown tackle against the Saints and the Minneapolis miracle. And there's so much to get to. He's loose. Paul Allen hasn't had a lot to really, you know, rah-rah about. So I wonder what's going on with that Vikings franchise.
I think that's a very fair point, and I think he's somebody who may not be on the plank, but his chair's not far from it either. As far as a coach that I think could join the conversation, and granted, there has been a roller coaster ride of just who's been available and who hasn't.
Right.
Because I think the team was tough his first season, took a run at the playoffs, came up just short season number two. I wonder where Brian Flores is in Miami, because if there's a disappointment right now, and granted, Tua Tagovailoa has not been on the field right. as much. He's been probably as much off the field as he's been on the field, but that doesn't mean that there weren't great expectations for Miami to stay in front of the New England Patriots and perhaps kick down the door, since you just missed the postseason last year, to make the playoffs this year. You've got all kinds of youthful talent because you had so many draft picks that were gifted you by Bill O'Brien and others. But you have Buffalo 4-1, Patriots second place at 2-3, and there are the Dolphins at 1-4. And so my guess is that he's not anywhere close to a hot seat yet, but if they lose to Jacksonville today in London, if it continues to be a struggle, I think they might take a look at it. I mean, here's somebody who fired an assistant coach before his first season ever began because of something that he saw in the preseason.
The questions also and the non-definitives towards making Tua the, hey, you are our be-all quarterback starting, he hasn't really given Tua that kind of that vote of confidence that so many coaches do. There's been that, do you? He hasn't completely shoo-shooed away trades for a certain quarterback in Houston. It just seems like no matter anytime you look at Miami, there's just so much uncertainty of what could be next. So you're right. That's why I guess I'm completely just looking at what's happening with the Dolphins right now, John. Pour it all in a blender because I don't know what's going to come out of it. I have no idea how this is going to play out.
I think his future is a lot tied to how well Tua Tagovailoa works out. And I think I obviously didn't see the play, but Will Brinson just tweeted this quote, that might be the I'm out on Tua throw, unquote.
See, and that's what I kind of go back to just
gotta
quickly.
Develop him, yeah.
It just sounds like that Brian Flores has never wanted to hitch his wagon to Tua. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, okay, so I got a chance of being an NFL head coach, and this is the product I've got to be tied to. I'm not ready to say that just yet. And Tua hasn't taken that step. And it all started, remember, first practice, fall camp, Tua throws 5 interceptions. Everyone's like, it's already begun down in Miami. And that's when the Flores uncertainty started coming out.
Yeah, is he not working out because he's not working out, or is he not working out because his head coach wasn't ready to invest in him? That's a tough question to answer that we may not know until Tua goes to his next stop, wherever it is after Miami.
And is it potentially involved in a trade to Houston, where the Dolphins perhaps lock on to Deshaun Watson, who don't even know. It's interesting how trade talks, or I should say rumors of trade talks, continue to circulate, but we don't know if he would be eligible to suit up. I mean, he's active and then deactivated by the Texans 1 week to the next, so he's not out, he's not on an injured list, but he is somebody that if they wanted to start him and he was willing to start, would the NFL say, yes, he can, with what we know – huge legal issues, and just a lot that has to be addressed before perhaps the next time he gets on an NFL field. Because even though we haven't seen anything recent in terms of the number of allegations against him, those individuals who have brought charges, you haven't seen any criminal charges yet. You do have a grand jury that's going to be seated in regards to this. And when you go to the civil aspect of these lawsuits, Brian, you're talking about not hearing what they have to say, the witnesses, until February.
Yeah.
So this isn't going to be taken care of anytime soon, and I'd be surprised if the NFL would let him play if indeed the Dolphins did kick a trade with Houston.
And I think that's why we haven't seen a trade yet, because the asking price is so high for someone that you don't know will play this year, and pending the result of that, may not ever play again.
Go back to that conspiracy theory, putting your tinfoil hat on. There's a reason why, in my opinion, Houston's reported asking price might be dramatically dropping when it comes to compensation for Deshaun Watson. Perhaps they see, we better cash in now, even if it's 45 cents on the dollar.
That's Tyler Ivins with Brian Rice. I'm John Wilkerson. We've got another half hour to today's edition of the NFL Report. We can tell you that the Jaguars lead Miami, and they're closing in on extending the lead. But again, the last half hour of the show, we will set the schedule for today. We'll take a quick look at the standings, as well as talk about previews for the games you'll hear on our airwaves, as well as what the Titans have in front of them. So we have 2 hours in, another half hour to come. This is the NFL Report at Carino's on the Parkway in Pigeon Forge, as you listen to 99.1, The Sports Animal.